Good evening. Welcome to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 19th of June 2023. My name is Paula Reet, Mayor of Kingbra, and it's my pleasure to welcome everybody here this evening. We don't have any members of the public with us, but I'm sure we have people watching along at home on YouTube on this particularly chilly evening. It's 5:30pm, so I now officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I'll ask the general manager to confirm that the recording has started.
Confirm, Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that we're meeting on this evening, pay respects to elders past and present, and also acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson. From our staff this evening, we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen, Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Dr Fox, our Senior Finance Officer, Ms Eaton, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have one apology this evening, and it is from Councillor Street. We're still on page one, confirmation of minutes, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting No. 10 held on the 5th of June 2023 and the Special Council Meeting No. 11 held on the 13th of June 2023 be confirmed as the true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I have a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting, there have not been any because we had the special council meeting last Tuesday evening. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? No? Thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from closed into open session or open into closed session? No, thank you. We don't have any members of the public here, therefore there are no questions without notice. Questions on notice from the public, we did have three. If members of the public who are watching this would like to submit a question on notice, they can do so by sending an email to kc@kingbra.tas.gov.au, and we also accept them through our website. We had three questions. The first on page two from Mr Biggins in relation to bushfire mitigation with a response from Ms Loxley and Ms Dinexter. Second one from Ash Towns in relation to King's Quarter apartment block and a response from Ms Tyler Moore. And on page five, a further question from Ashley Towns in relation to bus stop upgrade program and an officer response from Mr Reeve. Takes us to questions without notice from councillors. Do any councillors have a question without notice? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question from the General Manager's diary, which talks about that I believe yourself and the General Manager met with a representative of the Carlis Group to discuss the Margate development. Given its widespread interest in the channel, I was wondering if you or the General Manager could share anything to the community about that meeting or how the project is going?
Sure. I'll ask the General Manager. That was not a meeting that I was present at. The General Manager generally has a regular catch-up with a representative of the Carlis Group. I last met with them along with the General Manager a few months ago before the workshop had in relation to this matter, but the General Manager can provide some advice.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Antoli, the most recent catch-up was with Corey Bygraves, who would be known to councillors from a recent presentation at a councillor workshop. The discussion was about the progress of the Margate development, and he noted that the first stage, the shops fronting Channel Highway, are under construction. Some tenancies have been locked in, some are still being negotiated. In terms of the supermarket, which I know is a question that the locals are always asking, the Carlis Group is still negotiating with a prospective tenant. And the other point of discussion in that regard was the ability to get the high voltage transmission to the supermarket site, which is at the rear of the shops that are currently being built. I've handled that one to my colleague, Mr. Reeve, because one potential alignment would see it come through a short section of the council road reserve, not the asphalt, but the actual footpath part of the road reserve. So that was it.
Thank you, General Manager.
Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. I had two questions, but Councillor Antoli asked my first one. That's great. I've got another question, though, relating to the General Manager's activities on page 64, and that is this June 7 meeting with Minister Julie Collins regarding various matters. So just wondering, given that Ms Collins is the Federal Housing Minister, if any of those various matters involve discussions around housing in Kingborough.
The General Manager can answer that. I was also in attendance at that meeting, but you've asked it of the General Manager. General Manager.
Through you, Mayor, please feel free to fill in any gaps. That particular discussion, Councillor Dean, covered a range of issues that were obviously topical at the time. Most known to Council, of course. It included, and the Mayor's memory is probably better than mine, but it included a discussion on the update of our reconstruction of the Channel Highway through Kingston, the Transform Kingston program, of course, the Kingston Park. We also discussed other issues that included, from memory, help me, Mayor.
I will. Minister Collins was coming wearing, I guess, two hats, one as Federal Minister for Housing, but also predominantly as local member for Franklin, because she's trying to stay in touch with some of the activities within her area. As well as those items, we did discuss the Hobart Women's Shelter land, which she was delighted to hear about from a housing perspective. We also had quite a lengthy discussion about the frustrations that I see as a municipality that sits within a non-marginal seat and our lack of ability to attract federal funding. So we did have a discussion about some upcoming grant rounds that the federal government has announced, and she encouraged us to put forward projects that might meet the guidelines. The sort of projects that we discussed that I highlighted as being the two ones of significant need for Kingborough, which are, I believe, probably beyond the scope of council alone, are, of course, the upgrade of Kingborough Sports Centre and the recognition for that to be regarded as a regional project and not just a project within Kingborough, given where the catchment area for people who are using that centre is coming from, and even as far away as the Eastern Shore, people come to use facilities there. I note, for example, that there was $20 million provided to Devonport for a upgrade of their sports facilities for a city that is significantly smaller than our municipality. So she's got that message loud and clear, and I indicated that that was something that we would continue to put forward on behalf of the community and develop a strategy for lobbying significantly harder for that in future years, because it is when we had the last quote for a $26 million project, and that was the scaled back one, so this is something that we can't do alone as a council. I also did indicate the need for us to, I foreshadowed that we have a business case coming now for some car parking within the main area that we've all workshopped before, and that once we had that, we would certainly look at any grant opportunities that the federal government might have available to assist us with that, provided the business case stacks up. And we did have quite a significant discussion about the extension of ferries to Kingborough. That was something that the minister was quite keen on. There had been $20 million that had been provided by the federal government as an election promise in the lead-up to the last election. That was provided to Greater Hobart mayors. We have had a study done to look at the viability of that, the results of which I'm not at liberty to share at this point, but it certainly did examine the feasibility of Kingborough as part of that, although probably not in the initial phase because of the significant costs associated with it, but it's certainly something that is on their radar as a federal government. I think that's about... The Deputy Mayor might... She was also at the meeting. She might remember something. What else we touched on?
She mainly wanted to hear our priorities.
Thank you. Yeah, she was very keen to just hear on, you know, what... We also had a discussion about crossings at Margate and a few other sort of issues. So it was everything that was top of mind throughout the electorate to keep her up to date.
Could I just thank you for a very detailed response? That's obviously a really, for me, when I see that, it's obviously a big meeting and it's obviously spent a lot of time that you guys had with the Minister. In the brief time that I've been a councillor, we have had parliamentarians come to visit in this chambers, and we've been, as councillors, invited to either attend or pass on questions. And given that we are working on what's on tonight's agenda, a housing statement, could I just maybe ask that the next time the Minister is willing to spare the time to visit, that either we be asked as councillors to also attend, and if we're not, that's not deemed appropriate, that we either are able to pass on our own points or questions.
This was fully take that on board. It was arranged at fairly quick notice at their request. I think she'd had a vacancy in her diary and was doing a quick... So I think she was headed to Huon Valley after us. Generally, when... it varies between individual members of Parliament, whether they have the time or the... You know, whether they would like to meet with all councils, but I'm happy to, when we have other approaches, to send out a note in advance and say, this is who I'm meeting with. Is there anything you'd like to put to them? That's a really good idea. I take that on board. Councillor Richardson.
I just wanted to ask Mayor about the lights, the footpath lights down in Margate, the battery operated solar power ones. I've had a couple of conversations with Mr. Reeve about this, and I know we've got some issues sourcing parts. I happened to be down there early this morning and noticed that there's 8 lights down there in total and one is functional. So I wonder if there's any update at all on those.
Mr.
Please.
Reeve, can you help us with that?
Through you, Mayor, yes, I can inform you that the repairs are imminent.
Dying to get that in.
It's been quite delayed, unfortunately, because of supply issues, as you're probably aware. So I did receive an email today to say that they have now received the batteries, so they're intending to do the works, I believe, tomorrow and Wednesday, so hopefully they'll be operational again.
That's pretty imminent. So let's hope you're not asking the question in 2 weeks' time as well. Thank you, Mr. Reeve. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. The imminent triggered a memory for me. Sorry, and it was raised at the Kingborough Community Forum. And I'm quite sure I wasn't there for this question when it was asked by the Bruny Island Community Association, but if the General Manager can recall, I think it was in regards to the Alona Hall. I think I raised a couple of months ago regarding the maintenance of that and perhaps some cleaning or something like that. And I'm quite sure I heard from the Bruny Island Community Association that it hasn't happened yet, and I'm just wondering if anyone else would like to clarify exactly what that was the roof. Councillor Bain.
Does sit in Mr. Smee's area, and he's not with us this evening, so we might have to take that on notice unless... Mr. Reeve, you keen to have a stab?
He never
misses an opportunity.
Not that keen to have a stab, but I know you love my dulcet tones. Yeah, I know this one was raised before, and it was set up to our building maintenance area, so I know they have scheduled it, so I can check to see where that actually is. So I expected it probably would have been completed by now, but I'll certainly check that out.
Thank you very much. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question, and there might not be anything publicly available on this yet, but just in regards to the GM's diary with the meeting with 10 Lives to discuss their plans, is there any information that can be conveyed publicly about that? I'm particularly interested in Margate, obviously.
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. It was primarily a discussion Councillor called over about the preparation of their master plan, which best for them to explain, but I got the impression was that whilst they were currently in Margate, that side of the business was not necessarily their main focus, and part of their master planning was to address the financial sustainability of the organisation moving forward. And they were discussing with a range of stakeholders how that might be achieved, and when they've drafted something and we're in receipt of it, I'll certainly make it available to councillors.
Thank you.
Any further questions? If not, we will move on. We're on page 5, still petitions still being actioned. There were no petitions still being actioned. And at the time the agenda was compiled, there are no petitions that had been received. Takes us to page 6, donations policy 3.3, with a recommendation on page 8. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved in Councillor Midgley. Seconded Councillor Cordover. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just moving to that one. As noted in the report, this was brought to Council, I think it was in May, and there was, what I recall, a robust discussion about this. And then it was brought to Council again, I think, with some, and I think it was removed, there was some more changes. But it was some great points. I think it was Councillor Cordova that raised in regards to a review around the need for provision for an increase to donations amounts over the life of the policy was not included, and now we've got a policy before us that has been included. So I initially supported that one in May and support this change as well. It's a great recommendation. It's a policy that I guess gives a little bit to community members. One thing I will note is that I find that a lot of people actually don't know about it, and often people who engage in different sporting or chess pursuits or science pursuits or whatever interstate, I think it feels like it's a bit like word of mouth that actually they can apply for it. And I note as well that staff has made some great changes to the application form and things like that to make it a lot easier as well. But I do know for many family members, a little bit actually does help, especially when sporting fees and things cost up to $2,500. So it is a really great thing that we can support the community with. What are some other changes? So basically there's been a review of the layout, so it does really make it easy to read, separating mayoral donations to policy donations, noticing that we give like the citizenship awards, so for councillors around the end of the year we attend assemblies and are able to give an award to some of the students there, and that's a really great thing that we can offer schools. And what else? Oh, basically that individuals will only be entitled to one payment each of interstate, overseas and world championships, and there are some people in our community who do all of them actually, some gymnasts out there. And also I recall noting as well that the state government has like a junior travel assistance program as well, because I think, I guess like us, they also get inundated around applications for this as well, so it's great that we've added a policy line in regards to that. And the next change is specify the mayoral donations will be for one-off donations and not regular annual donations, so that's a good thing to know for community groups as well. And there's just some guidelines around the donations and the increase of $10 each financial year for the life of the policy. So thanks, staff, for taking our robust discussion and comments on board, and I hope we'll support it tonight.
Thank you very much, Councillor Midgley. Next I had Deputy Mayor Gladewright and then Councillor Fox after that.
Thank you. I just had a question. I was confused by the wording in 4.5 and 4.6. The next change is, and then the final change is that, do you mean these are the changes that have taken place?
Ms. Eden.
Through you, Mayor, yeah, this is correct. It's notifying each of the changes in the document.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Fox.
Yes, I'm in support of the policy and the change of wording. I'm just a bit, I'd like to have a question on item 4.3 in the policy on page 10 in the draft, where it says there will an individual will be entitled to one payment for 4.1, 4.12 and 4.13. Mm-hmm. Do they mean one payment only for one or the other, or
no,
all three?
No, so it means that if they are represented to, if they represent the state and then they represent the country, they can get each one from each of those. But, yeah, does that make sense?
That
yeah.
really does yeah. make sense. Yeah. But
so if they go on to the next level up.
Yeah. I wonder if the wording should be changed or if other people had the same response or if it's just me.
Well, I can't really do a straw poll. I understood what it meant. I don't know whether others believe it needs clarification.
Okay, that's good.
All right.
Thank you.
Any further speakers? If not briefly, I just wanted to say a couple of words. I know we've considered this before, but I think it may not seem like a lot of money, but I think that we all know the cost impost for parents of children who are involved in activities, and if they are then selected to represent their state and represent their country, there are significant costs, particularly with airfares increasing constantly. So I'm really pleased to see that we've actually got an annual increase in the assistance that is provided now. We now have a streamlined process in that we have a form online that people who are applying for this can go straight to and fill it out. So that was implemented last year, so that's hopefully making it easier. I would like to see us publicise this a little bit more, so for councillors here, if you can, once this goes through, it'd be really good if we can share this on our social medias and just say, look, you know, if you do have a child who is involved in any activities and they get chosen to represent Tasmania or Australia, then please, and it isn't just for children actually, it is for adults as well, if we have somebody from Kimberley who's representing us, Australia in the Olympics or Commonwealth Games, they can also apply as well. But I really want to get the message out that this is not just for sporting achievements and that this is available for people who are representing Tasmania in whatever their field of extreme talent is, whatever that might be, because there are... I remember when my children were at school, not that either of them were particularly mathematically inclined, because they inherited that gene from me, or lack of it, but they there used to be competitions where they could go on to represent the state at like maths Olympiads and Tournament of Minds, which is a great one, which really involved them, and science competitions, and it's about, you know, environmental wellbeing ones. I know we've had young people in the past who have represented the state at, you know, been asked to go and speak at environmental conferences or something, and internationally. So we need to get that message out that this is for, you know, a range of different activities, not just sports, and that we're very proud of people who go on to represent our municipality. We want to support them in that endeavour, and that it's not just for children is the other thing. So, thank you. I can see another light on in Councillor Antoli.
Yes. How aware are the schools and our municipality about all of this? Are they informed? Are they plugged in?
I think it varies. I think, like Councillor Midgley said, it's very much been a word of mouth. Mm. But I think now that we've bedded this down, hopefully shortly, that we should perhaps write out to schools and say, look, you know, if you do have anyone, because if you read school newsletters, you see, oh, you know, such and such is representing.
I see it all the time.
The state, yeah. So I would like to see, you know, we have an allocation of money here, and I would really like to see us selling it a little bit more so that it doesn't become a word-of-mouth thing. So if we can all assist in that, that would be terrific.
Yeah, there's a young man at my children's school who's representing Australia in Spain at futsal. So
yes, I have given a donation. Would that was if it's the same person,
there aren't a lot of them around. It probably is the same person.
It is. Yeah. Yes. No, they're there at the moment, I think.
Okay.
Yes. So right, and they received a donation.
Good on you, Mayor. Well,
Ms. Eaton's nodding because we did follow it up.
Well done. You'll get you'll get lots of votes the next election, I'm sure. Well done.
Any further discussion, Councillor Midgley? Did you want to sum up? Thank you. I'm going to put the motion. It's that Council approve the updated donations policy 3.3, moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Cordover. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 16, revised footpath provision and maintenance policy, with a recommendation on page 17. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Got a mover in Councillor Gladright and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to present a revised footpath provision and maintenance policy. As the Chair of the Safety Committee, I know that footpaths are very, very important to our community members, and it's great to see that we have these guidelines that let us know how we should go about installing them. So I think this is a great policy and I'm happy to support it.
Thank you. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. I just had a couple of questions on this one, and so firstly let me say that I do support this policy and I think it reads well, but my question is about when a person, when somebody in the community identifies a footpath that they feel needs improvement, that they feel is not fit for purpose, please talk us through how community members can best get their recommendation for improvements onto our list, and then what kind of communication that person might get about where their request is on the hierarchy.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I guess there's a couple of different avenues they've got. They can either come direct to council there, and it'll generally come through the engineering department, and we'll do an assessment, and then they'll put it on a potential future footpath list. Or they may not. It may not actually meet that criteria, and it may not be possible to actually put a footpath in place. And generally, they'll be provided some information about that afterwards. It could actually come through some of our committees as well at the same time. So as Councillor Gladright pointed out there, the various committees have an interest in this area as well at the same time. But certainly I would encourage people, if they do have particular areas which currently don't have footpaths, which they believe should have a footpath that sort of meets the criteria within this policy, that they probably come direct to engineering, because that's where it'll end up anyway. And I guess we then keep a list of all the various different competing requests, and from that it depends on whether or not where they are on the list as to where they might actually end up in the five-year forwards capital program as well.
Great, thank you. That's very helpful. And through you, Mayor, basically the reason why I'm interested so much in this, I've been telling people, well, recently somebody said that they wanted improvements to the area around Redwood Village, that there were footpaths there that, you know, might be a tripping hazard. And my response was, you know, please do call the council, please do email kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au and submit that for a service request, and then it goes through our process. But what I'm interested in is that according to our roads and routes hierarchy, my reading of it is that it's basically about the quantity of traffic that goes through, or foot traffic that goes through there. But the point that I want to raise is that obviously there are some areas, Redwood Village being one, or near aged care homes being another example, of where there might not be as much in terms of the number of people going up and down on the footpaths, but there might be people who require more care, and therefore we need to pay more attention to those footpaths. Even though they don't have the high number, we do need to pay special attention. So is there any general commentary around that issue that we could hear?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, yeah, certainly all those things get taken into account there, so it's not just about the volumes of people who may or may not want to use it. It's actually to do with particular types of users as well. As you say, in an aged care area, and there's a couple of them around the place, you'd look at that more carefully in terms of, do you require a footpath on both sides of the road? How critical is that? You certainly look at your access as well, so it's not just the footpaths, but it's access to and from our cross intersections and across the road as well at the same time. So all those things get taken into account as part of the assessment process. One of the things I would mention though, because you did mention Redwood Village there, there is certain areas in council which aren't maintained by council as well at the same time. So some of those ones there we have less control for. So that's obviously sitting with a body corporate as compared to council. So happy to take all the requests there, but obviously if it's in an area that's not maintained by council, the answer will be that, you know, that's something you need to chase up with your own body corporate.
Thank you, that's very helpful. And then finally, through you, Mayor, I'm interested about share paths, specifically in terms of encouraging more active transport, people on bikes, e-scooters and the like, and the relationship between, obviously as we have more people using bikes and e-scooters, which is fantastic, we also have to balance that against the pedestrian risk, so to speak. And so I'm just wondering, is it the right place, should we have more in this policy about how we plan to improve shared paths and that that relationship with multiple users? Should that be in the policy, or is it maybe something that when we have a continuous improvement officer, will it be dealt with? My question is, where will it be dealt with that we're prioritising adding in shared paths everywhere, but shared paths that are hopefully are separated or otherwise made safe for all users?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I guess that can be best answered by saying that we certainly have an advisory committee from a bike advisory committee, and certainly there's been a huge amount of work that's been done on a cycling strategy, and within that there, that incorporates a lot of information about shared areas, slow streets, a number of other different initiatives as well at the same time. And I guess that's where we would actually be advocating through and actually taking our advice for in terms of actual future projects in that space. The other thing that I probably would actually add there is we've allowed for in our capital deliberations there to actively look at where there might be cycling links that need to be considered with any project, so that will get picked up there as well. So I suppose the reference to it in this policy is just to make sure it's sort of also in there as well at the same time and doesn't get lost in translation, and in particular is picked up in things like new developments as well.
Thank you. And so with that, let me just thank the author and the authoriser and commend the policy to the council. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask about the gravel paths and particularly the Margate walking track. There's some fairly significant vegetation encroachment, and from what I've seen, it's just being mowed. So I guess specifically, what is the maintenance regime for gravel paths that have vegetation encroachment?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I guess it just depends on what it actually is as well at the same time. So there should be no difference between whether it's a gravel, concrete or an asphalt path in terms of any vegetation encroachment. I guess there's a couple of issues with it. Will be whether or not the encroachment there is actually causing either an immediate issue from a condition perspective or an issue from a safety perspective, mm-hmm. as to when or not work might actually be done in that space. But it is just a matter of a service request for that to actually be followed up for any of those particular instances. So I don't think there's any particular difference. Obviously, if you've got concrete footpaths, they tend to be more in an urban area there where it's slightly different. But certainly, yeah, there shouldn't be any difference in terms of that.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I also have a couple of questions. First one is under Section 5.1, where it's procedure, policy and detail. I noticed one of the changes is we've added the words on council roads to that top section, so footpath revision on council roads. And just wondering the reasons behind that. Is it because we obviously can't afford to do it through all state government roads? And the other part of the question is, when we do...
Let's take it in two parts. Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So, yes, so, generally we'll only be doing work on council roads. In terms of state highways, it becomes quite tricky because where we might put a footpath on the state highway, there's a nice little thing that they have in their Roads and Jetties Act that basically involves us actually then taking maintenance responsibility for both sides of the highway, which is something we won't always want to do. It can be quite expensive. So we have to look at that fairly closely when we're looking at particular linkages and so forth. It doesn't mean that we can't have those discussions with the Department of State Growth there and actually see if we can make some adjustments to that agreement. But it does mean that we have to be fairly careful before we actually put in a footpath on somewhere like the Channel Highway, for example, where we've had requests before in different locations.
Okay.
Councillor Bain.
The second part of the question was just going to be, so I guess when we do the footpaths on state government roads, I assume that we'll follow similar sort of procedures and guidelines?
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, look, there's no difference. The policy's supposed to cover, you know, footpaths in all locations where we might actually be doing work. So if we're elected to do something on state roads, clearly we have to actually refer it to the Department of State Growth, so whether they have their own conditions as well at the same time. But generally we'd be trying to apply the same sort of provisions we've got in this particular policy.
Councillor Bain, another one?
Yeah, sorry, there's a separate question.
No, that's okay.
Under 6.3 urban development, where it talks about 6.3.1, it talks about the need for footpaths on both sides of the road and around cul-de-sacs. I'm sure we're all aware of lots of different subdivisions where we've only got the footpath on one side of the road. Just interested in the reasons why that's the case. What sort of...
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, look, it's certainly something which we... It's a bit of a change in terms of how we've actually approached things before from new developments in subdivisions there. But it has come back to bite us a few times there where we haven't put that in place there. So if you think about it, you know, everybody who might live in a particular street there should actually have access to the same sort of amenity. And what generally happens there, based on history, is that then we get requests from people to actually put a footpath on the other side of the road there, and it ends up going on that list, which Councillor Cordova was actually mentioning before. So it is actually much better to try and pick this up early in the piece and recognise the fact that there is some expectation for people out there, particularly in urban areas there, that they'll have access to a footpath.
Thank you.
Councillor Fox and then Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. I have concerns about rural roads. On page 20 it says footpaths may not be provided when the road is classed as a rural road or minor urban road. And the main reason I'm concerned about is that a lot of school children get dropped off on rural roads in order to get home, and then they have to walk quite a long length sometimes, and it would be better for them to walk home than to be picked up by cars, and I think that's not in anybody's interest. But it's such a blanket statement that rural roads will not get footpaths, and I guess I'm thinking about areas like Snug, where they're walking home from school, also down the channel, down Middleton Way, and even through... or some of the rural roads near Trial Bay and Howden, where a lot of school children walk along the road on both sides of the road, but there isn't a formed path, and there's a difference between a formed path and a footpath. And in rural areas, it's often there's nature strips that would be quite suitable for a formed path rather than concrete and, curb and channel, etc. And I was wondering if that could be considered as an option rather than having it in the policy here that, no, we're not going to do it. Just would like some comment on that.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, I don't think the intention is to say that we're not going to do it. I guess we would look at those on a case-by-case basis. I guess the intention is to say that generally in a rural area there, that provision won't be there for a footpath. It doesn't preclude it, and in fact it actually says that in particular cases there where we're doing new development there, we may or may not actually allow for that. I guess all we're trying to say is that generally for a footpath We're actually looking at more the urban type areas there, but there is plenty of examples of where we've actually provided footpaths in some rural areas, and we'll probably continue to actually do so. And bearing in mind that, you know, this is footpaths, so it doesn't necessarily touch on the other aspect, which is tracks and trails as well, which quite often actually appear in our rural areas. But I certainly take your point. If for example there was an area where it was frequented or heavily frequented by school kids or something along that ilk there, it may be that some consideration is certainly given to, might not be a gravel footpath, but it may be a shoulder area that would allow them to actually safely walk from where they need to walk to actually get to a bus stop, for example. So certainly not meant to preclude that.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, I just want to thank Councillor Bain and Councillor Cotover for their really helpful questions. It really picks up on one area of our municipality in Taruna where I know that this Channel Highway is constantly, I'm requested about the state of footpaths down there, and also the fact that we have a lot of roads or streets without any footpaths at all, and I would think that Taruna is deemed an urban road. Could I just check that that's right, Mr. Reeve? Or
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, look, as far as I know, nearly every road in Taruna is urban.
Yeah, and so I think that probably just makes very clear about this policy, and it is stated in 5.1 that there are many great aspirational things in this policy about retaining trees, about curb ramps, about footpaths at least on one side, but we know that there are many areas in the community that still aren't up to scratch, and it just shows how much it costs to actually get them done, and I'm sure we'd love to maintain them all to, and you know, the absolute gold standard. I did just want to get down into the weeds on one question that is relating to curb ramp 6.5 on page 22 of the agenda. Is there anything within these standards, because I haven't read them cover to cover, around crossing distances? Because I just used the example, more recent example, of Meath Avenue in Taruna, which is right next to the school. There were significant stormwater upgrades there, and the crossing distance remains pretty wide still, and I know there was cost overrun on that particular project, but that is very, very busy intersection for foot traffic for getting to and from school, and the crossing distance is still relatively high, very wide. And looking at what other councils have been doing near to Kingborough is that they are building other on-road infrastructure in terms of, you know, narrowing it as much as possible. That obviously makes it safer to get across when you've got a pram or whatever and you've got multiple kids trailing behind you, or ensuring that footpaths are as continuous as possible. So is there anything within that curb ramp section, I don't see it there, but within the standards where it relates to, around crossing distances, and whether we can maybe include something there if it's not?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, it's not a prescriptive sort of item, so each area would be assessed on its own merits. The difficulty with some of our roads there, which is the bane of my existence, unfortunately, is that, you know, they've been constructed at different times there, so there's a number of different intersections within the Taruna area there with a very wide throat, which makes it quite difficult because, you know, as you say there, you've still got quite a bit of traffic there. They're leading up to the Channel Highway, and then actually crossing across that without a refuge in the middle there tends to be a little bit difficult for people sometimes. So we have in the past actually tried to narrow some of the throats of some of those intersections there to, I guess, make that a bit easier for people to cross. And that's generally the approach we would actually take where we needed to. In terms of Meath Avenue, I guess the difficulty with that one is that started off pretty much as a stormwater project, and unfortunately because of the issues we actually had with the underground rock, it turned into almost a pseudo-road stormwater project. But it certainly wasn't intended to actually then go and try and deal with some of these other aspects, such as you mentioned there, the crossing points at the intersection. There was a it was intended to be a future project that was going to be dealing with a lot of the road issues. It just happened to be because we had to deal with some of the road issues as part of that project, you know, some of that was done then. So certainly any of the ones there that people do find difficulty in actually crossing are ones we can look at as future projects to actually try and look at the intersection.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thanks so much for putting it out to the committees. I know KBAC had a bit of a comment around the curb and the shared path, so it's great to see that included. I'm just wondering what the catalyst is for signage, noting that with the increasing, I guess, around Kingston Park and the fantastic shared paths that are around there, what's the catalyst, I guess, for footpath to have a sign saying this is a shared path, keep left, da-da-da-da? Does that form part of a, should it be included in the policy or it's a separate thing?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, ma'am. Look, it's just a technical detail in terms of how we'd actually sign shared paths. So they would normally have some either stencils or potentially some signage there, depending on where it's located there, to actually let people know that there's other users. And it might not only be cyclists and pedestrians. Quite often we'll have stencils for other things as well at the same time. It's not so much something you'd have in a, as a policy statement. It'd be more along the lines of actually saying that's just how you would actually go about constructing one of those types of paths there.
Great. Further comments? If not, before I ask Councillor Gladewright to sum up, just on behalf of the Disability Inclusion Access Advisory Committee, we did consider this revised policy at our April meeting, and members were very supportive of the changes. But I do want to place on record one of the frustrations that members of the committee have is that this is a great policy, but unfortunately there are members of the community who are making that movement around some of our paths very, very difficult by parking partially on the footpath or wholly in the footpath, by leaving wheelie bins out for days and days and days, and by not trimming back over overhanging vegetation, which they must do to a particular height. So that was the catalyst last year for a brochure being included in the rates notice that went out to all our households in July. And we did try to phrase it in a very nice way, like, let's think about how your actions can actually impact somebody else in the community. We weren't very heavy-handed in the brochure, but we did point out, you know, if you park your car partially on the footpath, you might think you're doing the right thing by getting it off the road, but you're actually impeding somebody who really needs to be on the footpath, whether that is somebody in a wheelchair, somebody with a mobility device, parents with prams, parents with little children who are learning to ride their bike on the footpath, and so on. But all of those things are actually under our different bylaws. They're actually illegal, those activities. So that's another thing that we have had it out on our social media in the past, but it continues to be a frustration to those members of the Access Committee who do rely on mobility devices to get around the community. And I know, for example, I live in a cul-de-sac and people think they're doing the right thing when they're visiting houses and they park up on the footpath. And I'd say every weekend, because it's cul-de-sac, I can see parents and children coming along and then they have to go, they're blocked, and then they have to go onto the road and continue around on their journey, and it's not safe. So it's about all of us trying to get that message out as well. But very pleased to see this. And Deputy Mayor, would you like to sum up? No, thank you very much. I'll put the motion. That is that Council endorse the attached revised footpath provision and maintenance policy. It was moved by the Deputy Mayor and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 30, Statement on Housing, with a recommendation on page 33. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I have a mover in Councillor Dean, a seconder in Councillor Cordova. Councillor Dean.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. This is a motion I'm obviously very happy to move and to support. Before I make my contribution, though, I just have a couple of clarifying questions. The first is that on the face of this statement, it might be that some of the community are wondering why there is short-stay accommodation missing in this statement. So I just want to clarify, is it correct that staff are preparing a report on this? And if they are, when that might be due before Council.
Dr. Fox.
Through you, Mayor, we are indeed preparing a report, writing it as we speak. I expect it will be through in the next month or so.
Councillor Dean.
So just to follow up on that, will that report measure or seek to measure the impact of short-stay accommodation specifically in Kingborough?
Dr. Fox.
Through you, Mayor. What we're trying to do with that report is to identify the impact of short-stay accommodation and to have a look at the recent initiatives that have been undertaken, particularly around the City of Hobart, what they've been trying to do in this space, what levers we have in that space, and what we might do as Kingborough to understand that impact and to mitigate any impact on our rental market.
Councillor Dean.
And so final question there. I suppose depending on the outcome of that report, would it be correct in my thinking that if this were passed tonight, that there would still be potential to make adjustments to that further down the track?
Dr. Fox.
Through you, Mayor. My feeling is that, of course, there's always opportunity to make changes. I think the statement on housing is a high-level statement. It includes some fairly broad strategies in there which pick up on short-stay accommodation in the broad in terms of advocating for planning controls, for example. That might be a measure that we seek to move forward with after the report to Council. The action plan is where a lot of those more detailed actions will be articulated by the working group, the internal working group, and indeed the action plan at the moment includes actions around short stay accommodation and understanding that impact and what we can do in that space. So the statement, as I said, very broad, is intended to pick up that body of work without individually articulating that in there.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much to the Director of Environment, Development and Community for explaining that, just because I think it's important that we address it, because short-stay accommodation is obviously hugely topical in the community, and I'm glad that a report is coming before us and just to help explain potentially why some might see this and go, oh, why isn't short-stay accommodation mentioned? So that's really great. So I guess, just to my contribution, what we're here looking at is signing off on a draft statement on housing that's on page 34 of our agenda. I don't think I need to explain any more about why this statement is needed, other than to refer to the report before us, which highlights quite clearly how that pretty much on every key housing indicator that we are struggling, and Kingborough especially so. So, you know, whether it's finding a first home or an affordable rental or accessing social housing or supported accommodation, it's clear that accessing any of these options is becoming increasingly difficult, not just in Tasmania but Kingborough. And so the statement before us expands on what Council has already been doing to address this, but specifically names up five commitments of how we as a Council will improve housing in Kingborough. And I'm not going to read them all, but I will just mention briefly what they are. Of those commitments, the first involves advocating for increased investment into social and affordable housing. Second talks about working with developers and community housing providers. The third focuses on increasing housing supply on council land. The fourth encourages higher density living through appropriate zoning. And the fifth talks about advocating for better planning controls, which staff have already just mentioned there. So these commitments help really show why this statement on housing is so important. Because councils, of course, are not going to fix the housing crisis on our own. But addressing our housing crisis is clearly something that needs a coordinated response and action from both private and the community sectors, as well as each level of government, including ours. So what councils like ours can do, I think, is become better facilitators in helping not just increase housing supply, but ensure that supply includes the right mix of private, social and affordable housing. And so I'm obviously really pleased that those five commitments are on paper, on the public record, but I'm much more pleased about the action plan that's been put together by staff that will come with this statement. And this is described in 4.1 of the report, which I will actually just quickly quote from. 4.1 reads, "To enable implementation of the statement on housing, if adopted, an action plan has been developed that articulates actions, responsibilities and timelines for each of the strategies included in the statement. An internal working group will be established to monitor implementation of this action plan and the statement." And then what's in the agenda at the moment goes on to outline 16 specific areas and actions. And so it's these steps I'm really pleased about to see, and which will actually mark Council's first formalised and coordinated effort at helping address the housing crisis residents in Kingborough have been facing now, let's face it, for several years. So I really look forward to hearing from other councillors and really, really hope that this recommendation is supported. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Next, I've got Councillor Cordova and then the Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. First, to just a procedural point, I've made an error under 17.1 of the meeting procedures regulations relating to motions to amend motions at a meeting. A councillor who did not move or second a motion may move a motion to amend the original motion. I would like to make an amendment to this, but unfortunately I've accidentally put my name under seconding, so I seek your indulgence, Mayor, to please switch my name for one of the other councillors who might be willing to second this motion.
I'll need to take some advice from General Manager because that's not a request I've had before me. Are we able to do that? Because it's General Manager.
Through you, Mayor, I don't know.
Quite frankly,
I feel like there would be some people here who would be willing to second the motion who aren't me, and it was a...
You can withdraw seconding a motion.
There's 18.1 motion to...
Do you want to give us the page
decision
reference?
..to be overturned.
Could you give us the page reference?
Probably 18.1 on page 10 of 19 of the meeting procedures regulations would allow a chairperson to overturn a decision.
No, we haven't had a decision.
Well, we haven't had a decision. It's not a decision. Bear with us.
20.3A? No, that's
fine. That's it, no. Nice try.
I think all he can do is withdraw as a seconder.
Yep.
And then we can look for something else.
All right. Okay, we'll find a way around this.
My apologies.
Happy for you to, that's okay, happy for you to withdraw your seconding of the motion. So the mover is Councillor Dean. I'm looking for a seconder. I've got a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. Councillor Cordova, for your contribution.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll spring straight to the amendment then, and apologies for the delay in the meeting. So I move an amendment to this to add a provision about short stay. So I believe I've provided it to Ms Morton beforehand. It reads, add an additional dot point to read, encourage improvements to Kingborough's long-term rental market and discourage the use of entire dwellings as short-stay accommodation in localities where residential rental vacancy rate is less than 2%, with actions relating to this dot point to be determined by the General Manager in consultation with the Internal Working Group and added to the action plan.
So can I just clarify, so that paragraph that is up on the screen, you're intending that to be added to the statement on housing as an additional dot point?
Correct.
Is that correct?
And as part of this amendment, I'm also saying that there will be actions relating to this dot point to be added into the action plan.
Okay. All right. Is everybody clear on what the amendment is?
Where does one add it? Which dot point?
So you'd be adding a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th dot point. So technically the amendment is that a 6th dot point be added with quotation marks around that, which goes into less than 2%, full stop. So quotation marks before encourage. Yep, and then it ends, the quotation marks then end at 2% with a full stop. And then it'd be, and then a new sentence with actions relating to this dot point to be determined. Da 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 da. Is that an accurate
sure.
reflection?
Yep, that's fine.
Just
you probably don't
we need,
need
to be clear what the amendment is in the context of the recommendation that we have before us.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Okay, so I've got an amendment from Councillor Cordova. It's seconded by Councillor Fox. So we're now speaking on the amendment. Councillor Cordova, did you want to speak on the amendment?
Thank you, Mayor. This matters because from Brisbane to Byron and, of course, in Hobart, a whole range of experts and key stakeholder organisations have recognised that whole home short stay accommodation is directly impacting the rental market and therefore it is worsening the housing crisis. This is a great... the housing statement is good and it can be improved upon by recognising one of the key elements that's driving housing inaffordability and the rental crisis. To explain the kind of technical jargon within this, basically the residential rental vacancy rate is an economic indicator measuring the percentage of rental dwellings that are vacant. So basically you take the number of vacant rental properties divided by the total number of properties in a rental market and then you express that as a percentage. So the experts say that a rental vacancy rate of about 3% is considered very healthy because it represents a market that's balanced between buyers, between tenants and owners. Once you get a residential vacancy rate of less than 2%, you start to see a situation where rents start to go up. And the reason for that is that rental demand is higher than the number of available houses to rent. Now, we know that short stay accommodation, when it comes to taking whole homes or whole dwellings, that puts a lot of pressure on the market and it drives up rates. And there's been extensive research to show that. So in markets where the vacancy rate above what they call the equilibrium rate of 2%, in markets where that happens, you start to see the rate of rents going up. And in Australia, according to the Shelter Tasmania report, the equilibrium vacancy rate is approximately 2%. So what we want to try and do is make sure that we don't inadvertently put pressure on our long-term rental market to see that vacancy rate go below 2%. So right now, for example, as of last month, in the suburb 2050, in the postcode 7050, so the Kingston postcode, the vacancy rate was 1.1%, which is far too low. That's why we're seeing sometimes double-digit rent increases per year. So we want to tackle that. And this amendment goes to that point. How do we encourage Kingborough's long-term rental market? Well, we can do that by, for example, advocating to the state government for improved renters' rights. We can do that by finding ways to encourage greater housing diversity in the long-term rental market housing stock. We can do that by helping infill development. What does it mean to discourage whole home short stay accommodations in areas with low rental vacancy rate? Well, this amendment suggests that the internal working group or the general manager will determine exactly what those actions might be. But some examples from other jurisdictions include permit caps on whole home short stay accommodation in areas with vacancy rates that are too low. It also might include things like discouraging whole home short stay accommodation by providing, by charging people who have whole homes taken off the long-term rental market, charging them commercial rates. If they're running a business, they should be paying commercial rates. That might be one action that might be taken. Or, indeed, some jurisdictions have looked into planning scheme amendments to restrict whole home short stays in a given geospatial area. So we know that there are a number of actions that we can do to discourage the taking of whole homes off the long-term rental market. And devoting them to short-stay accommodation. We know the damage that this is doing, and some evidence for the damage that this is doing is that the draft Tasmanian Housing Strategy, which is available for public consultation right now, it says, and I quote from page 38 of that draft, the three tiers of government, that is the Australian government, Tasmanian government and local government, have joint responsibility in addressing housing and homelessness issues. And then page 36 of that draft acknowledges, quote, we recognise the importance of ongoing monitoring and exploring options to balance short-stay accommodation's impact on rental vacancy rates. So we know that at Council we do have responsibility to try and address the housing and homelessness crisis that we're facing. Part of the reason for the increase in people experiencing homelessness is because they can't afford to pay the rent and there aren't enough rentals available. And we now know that one of the main reasons why rentals aren't available in some areas is because too many of these houses have been put on the short stay accommodation market. So what we're trying to do is encourage more homes to be put back on the long-term rental market. In Greater Hobart, they found that it was up to half of the homes that are on platforms like Stays and Airbnb, up to half of those whole dwellings were actually previously on the long-term rental market.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Your time has expired.
May I please request 1 more minute just to summarise?
Seeking extension, I've got a procedural motion that Councillor Cordova be granted a 1 minute extension. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Gladerite. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Aye. Division is required. Show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Fox, Cordova, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Gladerite and Reet. Those against? Councillors Antoli and Richardson, the motion is carried. You have a further minute.
Thank you, Mayor. How would we determine where the localities are that have a vacancy rate of less than 2%? Well, this information is publicly available. You can go on a website right now from SQM Research and you can look at the residential vacancy rate for rentals in your neighbourhood by postcode or by suburb. So we know that we can easily identify areas like Kingston where you really don't want people taking whole homes off the long-term rental market, and we can identify other areas where it's really not a problem, so we shouldn't be as concerned by whole homes being taken off the rental market because there's plenty of other rentals available. So that's the purpose of this amendment. It's seeking to remedy a problem that we know we have capacity to remedy, and I really feel like this housing statement wouldn't be complete if we deliberately ignored such a significant aspect of why housing is so difficult and why rents are so unattainable for so many people in Kingborough. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next, I had Deputy Mayor Gladerite.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova, I really appreciate where your heart is on this issue. It says quite clearly here that recent data suggests that Kingborough has become one of the least affordable areas to rent in Australia, and I really feel for the renters in our municipality. However, I'm really concerned with this motion. It seems a little wishy-washy for me when it says encourage improvements. We don't exactly know what that is. I'm also concerned, as much as I have respect for our general manager, giving him the determination doesn't seem like a correct process. The correct process would be for decisions to come to us as a council. And given that we haven't had an officer's response to this amendment, I was wondering, please, if I could ask what the General Manager thinks about this.
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question, Councillor Gladerite. Apart from the concerns that you've just enunciated, my main concern is the wording that proposes to discourage the use of entire dwellings as short stay accommodation. It appears, Councillor Cordova, to be at odds with Planning Directive 6, which is in all planning schemes in Tasmania. Planning Directive 6 requires that, in fact, short stay accommodation is exempt for an owner or occupier for their main place of residence if they are on holidays or away from the house for a period of time. It's also exempt if it's for an owner and occupier if it's the main place of residence and they allow short stay accommodation for no more than 4 bedrooms. That's my first concern. My second concern is Planning Directive 6 goes on to say that apart from the exemptions, the acceptable standard is that if you have an existing accommodation, existing dwelling, the acceptable standard is provided it is less than 200 square metres in floor area, and not part of a strata subdivision, in other words, not part of a body corporate. I think you'll find if you read the TAS shelter report that was prepared in response to short stay accommodation, that it addresses the planning directive and makes the statement that, in fact, planning directive makes it very difficult for any planning department to refuse an application for short stay accommodation.
Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Yes, so there seems to be a lot of suggestions that are coming out from various politicians around the state around this issue. I feel like it hasn't sort of been nutted out yet and clearly defined. So I'm really concerned about trying to make a decision around this when things are still very unclear. I really appreciate that local government do play a role, but I'm not sure if this is it, and I'm yet to be convinced. So I won't be supporting the amendment.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I also honour Councillor Cordova's heart. I've told him that privately, and I'm happy to say that publicly. I think he's got a good heart on this issue. I think we all feel similar. The issue is not the intent, the issue is the method, I'd say. I must admit the General Manager's response was pretty nuclear for me, listening to all of that. I feel it adding this sixth dot point actually makes dot point number five a bit redundant, because dot point number five talks about planning controls, which gives us scope to maybe go down this road if these directives that the General Manager was talking about allows us. So I don't really feel it adds anything. I know personally, anecdotally, and I've shared this to all the councillors this week, how short-term rentals have actually saved two particular families in Kingborough from homelessness. One was an insurance issue where a family needed to be close to Taruna High School, and one of my neighbours was happy to rent his home to them and move out to a rental that they own in my street. And the insurance company was desperate to keep this family of four close to Taruna High, and another family is in between a home they've sold and the home they wish to buy, which has had hiccups with the vendors that they've purchased from, and they have been homeless for 3 months, and short-term rentals have saved them from homelessness. So I think it is a very valid service in our community, and we would need to be really careful about how we want to control that. Because I think there is a need. You can't always get a rental for 12 months. You may not need one. So for those reasons above, in particular the General Manager's rather pointed evidence, I won't be supporting this either.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I also won't be supporting the amendment for the reasons mentioned already, but probably my main reason is knowing that we've got a report coming up in a month with further details. I like all the details in front of me before I make a decision like this, so I think that's really important, and I just felt we'd be jumping the gun a lot if we went ahead with this, so I just want to wait till we've got all the details. So I'll be voting against the amendment. Thanks.
Councillor Dean.
I think we've all probably hit the nail on the head that we absolutely support the intent from the mover of this amendment. And I also, I agree, I mean, we want to tackle the unaffordable rents that people in Kingborough are facing. But in the opening statement, the Councillor Cordova has pointed out that, or made the suggestion that short stay accommodation is at fault for, or the main reason, I should quote, the main reason that rents are becoming unaffordable. And I think we just need to be clear, like Councillor Bain has pointed out, that we need to first see the evidence. And I think the responses that we've already heard from the Director of Environment, Development and Community about the fact that we are already getting a report that is not too far away that will exactly look at this issue is very resounding, in addition to the General Manager's comments. But I think the fact that the evidence is yet to come before us to include this would be a mistake at this point. And I wouldn't feel from a process issue that I could make a call on this without having seen that report. And also what the Director has alluded to, this is a high-level document, and what we're looking at up here on the screen is a very specific action which, even if it were to be considered as something that we need to take action or undertake, that it should really sit under the action plan and not necessarily as a dot point, because like Councillor Antoli has pointed out, this kind of does fall under point five. So I obviously having said all that, it's pretty clear that I'm not going to be supporting the amendment. But I will just finish saying that look, there are people at home looking at this, and if the media picks this up, there's potential that this council will be brandished as a council that's not willing to take action on short-stay accommodation. I just think if that characterisation does come out, I'll be very disappointed. And that's been brought about from this amendment because it's not the case. We have a report that's coming before us that has been voted in by councillors in September of last year. So we just need to see the evidence on this, and I think it's best just to wait and see before we jump the gun. I'm not going to be supporting this one.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I do look forward to Councillor Cordova's summary of everybody's comments to this, but it is so important that Councillor Cordova has raised this, and I actually did also, without Councillor Cordova knowing, did ask the author of the report a similar question about why Airbnb wasn't included in the statement. And I was provided the information that a report would be coming soon, and therefore, you know, the inclusion in some of the statements around the action plan and things like that, and also the Advocate for Improved Planning Controls, as Councillor Antoli and other councillors have suggested, that could be included in that. However, it isn't, like, loud and clear, and it isn't sort of setting a statement as to what we as a council could be doing in regards to the rising issue and questioning and advocacy from other councils around Airbnbs and cities around the world, what they are doing in regards to, you know, from Amsterdam, San Francisco, London, they're setting limits of 30 to 90 nights per year that can be booked on a platform for Airbnb. Boston and Amsterdam are imposing tourist taxes and things like that on short-term rentals. Paris has gone a step further, requiring short-term rental operators to compensate for lost rental supply in the city by purchasing and converting commercial floor space for residential use. The goal is to return housing to the market. So worldwide, regulations and enforcement and conversation is happening. It's just, I think, from a Tasmanian state government and planning authority, we're lagging behind and there hasn't been a decision there, so therefore it makes it really difficult for us as a council to enforce things, I guess, is what I'm hearing again from the General Manager, from what has been said there. So I guess it's really important that it's been raised, to put it down there as an extra dot point. I just don't think that we are ready to do that, but it is great to know that we can revisit this and we can include it later once we have the report with the information, if is needed, and that we can add that, I guess, to the action plan. I'll ask more questions when we go back to the, you know, if we do go back to the other motion, around the action plan as well. So, but thanks, Councillor Cordova, for raising it.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I seconded the motion on the basis of the fact that I feel we do need to encourage improvement to Kingborough's long-term rental market. And to me, that is the major point to be made in a statement like this. But I understand the concerns that other councillors have, and I wasn't aware that there was a report coming to us in the near future till the debate occurred, but I think the debate has been excellent, and I think anyone listening to this tape will realise that we're basically on the same page, and we'll get there in the long run. And thank you very much, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Before I ask Councillor Cordova if he'd like to sum up on his amendment, I just wanted to add a few words. Look, like others, I thank everyone for their contributions, because I think, as Councillor Fox has just acknowledged, I believe we all around this table realise that there is an issue and we want to do something about it. Unfortunately, I don't believe... I think we're, the statement of on housing that we're debating the substantive one tonight is a significant step forward for us as a council and a very important one. And I don't want that to be overshadowed by this amendment that we're having now. I have an issue with the amendment because I think the practicality of it, when you've got something that says we want to encourage improvements to long-term rental and discourage the use of entire dwellings, I don't know how, in a practical sense, as a council, we could actually achieve that. Because if somebody comes in with a development application because they want a change of use, we can't
we can't expect our plating staff to say, look, I'm really sorry, but the vacancy rate is now under 2%, and so therefore I would strongly discourage you from this application. You know, I don't know what practical implementation that this could possibly have. There is a lot of work that's going on around this, and it is very complicated, and I'm not being condescending. I appreciate that everyone has a view on this, but I think we've touched on some of the complexities of this when we talk about the number of short stay accommodations, the number of people that are renting out their whole house as opposed to a room to earn additional income, and let's not forget that actually can be very important to people, for like students, particularly overseas students who are just looking for a single room in somebody's house. Somebody who can't afford to rent a whole house, you know, is looking for quite often a single room. I have neighbours who do that because they've been separated and they rent out a room as a way of helping them continue to pay their mortgage. There is a place for that sort of setup in our economy. If you actually start to drill down, and hopefully this is what the report will do when we have it, if you start to drill down of the short stay accommodation that we have in Kingborough, about half of it, because there's a lot of duplication, because it's not as simple as going and getting the figures and going, okay, there are however 600 properties, because a lot of them are on duplicate sites. Last year, and I don't have the up-to-date figures, but last year when we had a debate around this, there were around 507, so these figures are about a year old, about 507 properties that in Kingborough that were listed for short-stay accommodation in total. But only half of those were whole houses. So the pool then drops down to 250. If you drill down even further, 160 of those were on Bruny Island. And they're on Bruny Island because the tourism market there is so strong that tourists didn't have anywhere to stay, and now the economy on Bruny Island has grown because tourists are able to stay there and spend several days. So that leaves you with about... My maths is really bad, as I said earlier, but it leaves you with about 90 properties, and about 45 of those are in Kingston Beach and Blackmans Bay. So look at the whole picture. I noticed that there was going to be a motion. We have a local government association general meeting next the end of next week. There was going to be a motion that has been put forward to that by Clarence City Council. They have now withdrawn it because there are so many motions and so much work that is going on throughout the sector where Legat is actively lobbying the state government. It is the state government that needs to try and come up with a statewide solution to this. As individual councils, it is fraught with, I think, all the legalities and dangers of the complexity of it all if we try and go it alone. So if there is something to be done, it needs to be a consolidated approach across Tasmania, and that sits in the domain of the state government. So whether it's something in planning or whatever, but can we just please try to focus on the fact that the numbers that we're talking about in Kingborough are not as significant as you would see in Hobart, for example. And that is probably a similar situation in any capital city where you've got tourism centred around that capital area. So I appreciate Councillor Cordova's amendment and the intent behind it, but I do think that we need to approach this sector-wide, and I would like to see that this is being advanced by the state government. Councillor Cordova, did you want to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. To sum up, firstly, my understanding is that in the postcode of 7,000, they currently have a more healthy rate of rental vacancies than in the postcode of 7050, which is Kingston. So yet again, look, we have heard sympathy, which I'm really happy about, and understanding from my fellow councillors about the rental affordability crisis and how this relates to our housing statement. This has been a good discussion. But sadly, a refusal to take a stand on this serious issue of entire homes being taken off the long-term rental market and converted to short-stay accommodation in areas that are really feeling the brunt of the rental affordability crisis because of rental vacancy shortage. And we know that in some areas up to half of the houses that are now being used as entire homes on Airbnb or stays, up to half of them used to be on the long-term rental market. So the issues that were raised in our discussion tonight were that of the practicality of the implementation of this amendment, of the general manager delegation, and this idea of IPD6 and our jurisdiction. To the issue of practical implementation, I think my amendment is just as practical as 4.1.1 to advocate for investment in social and affordable housing. In the same way that we can advocate for that, we can also advocate for policy prescriptions like encouraging more long-term rental or discouraging the use of whole houses inappropriately on short-stay accommodation platforms. To the issue of IPD6 that was raised by the General Manager, in my mind that's somewhat of a red herring because this amendment doesn't say we should contravene IPD6. It doesn't say we should contravene the planning scheme. All it says is that it's much more akin to 4.15 of the action plan, where we're going to advocate for improved planning. That doesn't say we're going to contravene the planning scheme. It just says we're going to advocate for improved planning. Well, my amendment says, it doesn't say we're going to contravene IPD6. It just says we're going to discourage the inappropriate use of whole homes that should be on the long-term rental market, and we're going to encourage an improvement to the rental market in the long term. So it was raised, this issue of what does it mean? It's a bit wishy-washy to have improving the long-term rental market. Well, I articulated that that will mean advocating to the state government for improved renters' rights. That means longer leases, allowing pets. It means better policies around bonds and security. Then to the issue of this idea that it's not appropriate to have the general manager receive the delegation. Well, actually, that is basically a procedural thing where in exactly the same way as we're delegating the authority to the internal working group to implement the action plan, in this case, rather than having it come back to council, I recommended in the amendment that we have it go to the general manager via the internal working group, and that's really just a procedural delegation. I wanted to make the point about IPD6 that, for example, that the housing minister has released a housing policy, but that doesn't mean that we somehow in contravention of the housing policy simply to advocate to the housing minister that we should have, you know, better outcomes for housing in our municipalities.
Time has expired. You only get 3 minutes in summing up under the meeting procedures regulations.
That's okay. I appreciate it.
I'm going to put the motion now. The amended motion, the amendment, which was moved by, I'm just making sure I've got this right, it was moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour of the amendment?
Aye.
Against? No. A show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Fox, Cordova and Midgley, and those against? Is Councillors Antolli, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Gladewright and Reet? The amendment is lost. We are back on the substantive motion. Now, according to my notes on the substantive motion, I think we have had so far Councillor Dean speak and Councillor Cordova. I think you went pretty much straight into your thing. So Councillor Dean has spoken. Nobody else has on the substantive motion, which we're back on. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions. I just wanted to know about this action plan. It says that it has been developed. Has it indeed been developed, or will it be developed by the implementation group?
Dr. Fox.
Through you, Mayor, a draft of the action plan has been developed because the internal working group hasn't fully been formed and because the statement hasn't yet been endorsed by council, it hasn't been finalised. So we have drafted an action plan with those actions in there that are included in the report with timelines and responsibilities. That's been circulated through to Mannix and to the management team. But if this is endorsed tonight, we'll then take that action plan, finalise it up and use that going forward.
So who's going to be on the working group? How does that get decided?
Yes. Dr. Fox.
Through you, Mayor. The working group will be those people included in in delivering those actions. So there's myself, people from the planning area, people from the council land area, other parts of council. So it's a management team, basically, subset of the management team.
Okay, and so the was it yourself who developed the action plan?
Dr. Fox.
Yes, it was, in consultation with other members from council. Other staff.
It just struck me that it probably should have been the working group that developed the action plan, or it just seems like the action plan has come first and normally that would come out of the working group.
Dr. Fox.
So through you, Mayor. So the working group, because the statement's not signed up, we've got an informal working group that will probably turn into the working group, but I didn't want to go too far with establishing a formal working group until the statement's signed off. So the action plan's been developed by those members of the working group. It will be the working group, but it's all just still a draft until we get the sign-off on the statement.
And so do any of the decisions come back to council?
Dr. Fox.
Through you, Mayor. So this is your opportunity to sign off on the statement. The action plan will be an internal document because it's going to have to be a living document as we implement actions in there, and responsibilities and timelines will need to shift around as we implement things. That's an internal document that won't come to council, but we will report back to council on an annual basis on what we have achieved and what we have implemented under that action plan. But it's an internal working document rather than a public council document.
Okay, thank you. I'm really interested as well to see this report on the short stay accommodation. And I note that it says here, undertake a council land property audit every 2 years to identify suitable land that may be appropriate for the development of affordable and social housing and supported accommodation in Kingborough. I'm really encouraged by the recent donation of land to the Hobart Women's Shelter. And so I was just wondering, when is that the land property audit due back? And maybe we could have that as part of the report on the short stay accommodation.
Dr. Fox.
I don't think we'll be in a position to have it ready for that, no. So I have to wait until Mr. Smee returns, but at this stage I don't think so, no.
Okay. Yeah, I, with that lens of that recent donation to the Hobart Women's Shelter, I'm suddenly now going, oh gosh, there's a little parcel of land that I know about there and I wonder if council owns that little pocket. And so I think it would be really great if we could maybe have a look at that sooner rather than later. I don't know if that requires another motion to council that we request that property audit or if you're able to just take a note of that, but it would be great to see what land the council does actually own and maybe all of its zoning, and then we could have a look at that again with fresh eyes. But I know I'm really interested in understanding that now. So I think that's all my questions. I'm really happy to support the statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gladright. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and thanks, Councillor Dean, for getting the catalyst and getting the ball rolling on this, and for staff for putting the statement together and all the hard work that's been noted here in the action plan and the thinking around this. It's really fantastic. I've had councillors from King Island to different parts of Tasmania sort of talk about housing and the role then of local government, and I have said that we are looking at a statement on housing and the land donation and things like that, and people are wondering what's the process we went about it. So hopefully you get to share this at one of your local government forums about the process of what Kingborough is doing and really celebrate the great work that you're doing this, that just the staff and everyone is supporting and doing this area as well, because as we have spoken before and I've shared, the housing crisis, we're in a place we've never seen like before in Australia and Tasmania, and it takes actions at all levels. So it's great to see that Kingborough is again being one of the leading ways on councils around this. Thanks, Councillor Gladright, for asking questions about the action plan. I think it is really fantastic, and it's great to know that it will come back to council, but I sort of think it's written up so fantastic that why couldn't have been like a strategy or some sort of formal document, I guess, that really... I know I can hear that, it is going to come back to council and we will have statements around how it's going, but I just wondered, why it couldn't have been written up like a formal
more document that went alongside the statement, I guess.
Dr. Fox.
Through you, Mayor, it's a good question and it's one that we have grappled with internally. Some of the issues with presenting the full action plan, for example, having it come up to council and putting it onto the website, means that we're getting a lot of individual questions about actions in there and how they're being implemented throughout the year. We have limited resources to implement this action plan. We really want to focus on the doing and not on the reporting back. However, that said, we do intend to have to write to relevant housing ministers and government agencies and developers to explain that we have this statement on housing and also to provide information on our website and other forums about the statement. We certainly want to promote it. It's a fantastic thing for our community and we do want to promote that we are open and ready to facilitate housing in our community. While the action plan is a document, I'm not intending, and we're directed to put that out and put that up to council. All of those actions will be communicated to the various stakeholders and through our website, etc., and certainly the implementation of that action plan will be communicated back to you and out to the community.
Great, thank you. And just a further question around like a working group. Is there any thought at all to sort of look at like an external conversation with people in the community like the Kingston Neighbourhood House or Salvation Army or different people that are actually working with people sleeping rough, I guess, and in the sector? How are you looking at this action and statement kind of in regards to those organisations?
Dr. Fox. Through you, Mayor. So the one of the strategies in the statement is around working with housing providers, and certainly Shelters has and the housing providers we would have an ongoing conversation with. If we do endorse the statement tonight, we'll be writing out to various organisations to let them know that we have the statement and that we're very keen to work with them and to have those conversations. We're also quite actively involved in the homelessness work that's being facilitated across the state and through the Greater Hobart Homelessness Alliance, I'll get the word wrong, in terms of homelessness. There are, in the housing and homelessness space, we need to recognise that there are limited levers for local government, particularly in homelessness. The service provision is through other agencies, not local government. So it's about us supporting and advocating and promoting in that space rather than actually delivering services for homeless people.
Thanks. Yes, no, it was more about hearing those voices of people on the ground mm-hmm. and the interactions they have. So that's really fantastic. Well done and thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I applaud this initiative and I thank all the people involved for putting it together. I would like to see certainly the community consultation aspect of this and also importantly that it could be an iterative process where council can be more involved in that action plan as it progresses. But apart from the short stay accommodation aspect that we've already discussed, another area that I do think is missing from this statement is about the importance of climate change and how it relates to housing and the environment. So, for example, just looking at the Tasmanian Housing Strategy Exposure Draft, that exposure draft mentions climate change in four separate areas and it relates to it in the context of, and I'll just quote a small passage that I think is relevant, quote, "Our housing must be responsive to the impacts of climate change and comply with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals while seeking to attract environmental social governance to build on Tasmania's reputation for clean energy," end quote. So putting aside the jargon, what I mean is we should have a focus on the UN Sustainable Development Goals. We should also recognise that when we do build social housing and affordable housing, when we do build any housing in this state and in this municipality, we should pay mind to, this is why I was so keen on a street tree strategy, we should pay mind to how it affects the people that live there in the community by what kind of environment is around those houses that we build. And that's an integral part of this. Particularly as we build these houses, they need to be built to a standard, it's not us that's going to be building them as a council, but when houses are built in our municipality, we need to pay attention to urban design principles, to active transport, to the environment that surrounds those places so that they're not exclusionary, so that they actually, we've seen all this with the Kingston CBD consultation that we did where everybody says we want it to be clean and green with nature brought into the centre, that we know that that improves health and well-being, we know that it improves social and environmental outcomes, we know that it improves economic outcomes and prosperity as well. So I think
what the housing statement, to my mind, just slightly misses is the importance of good, sustainable design, and the way in which we place housing throughout the municipality is actually important, particularly when it comes to even the design of the homes that we allow in. We don't yet have a better apartment guide, for example, for Kingborough. But when we do build things that have good energy ratings, that are well insulated, that are north-facing, that have passive thermal design, we're actually making life much more comfortable for the people that live there. We're making it much more affordable. We're making it much more resilient to climate change. And certainly for the people that are living there, going through a cost-of-living crisis, as we all are, the kind of houses that we're putting people in do directly affect their health. And this is what we're talking about, the social determinants of health. If you're in a place that is very cold and uncomfortable, that isn't built in a climate-responsive way, then you're going to have worse outcomes. And I do happen to know that in Australia, one example is that the single biggest determinant of life expectancy is actually the postcode in which you're born. And that's because of all these social determinants of health, where we have massive economic inequality, and that then leads to, for example, people in the lowest income decile having fewer teeth than people in the highest income decile. I mean, these are, you know, shocking and outrageous facts of where economic inequality contributes to worse health outcomes. So we are talking about housing and the impact of housing as a fundamental human right, that we all deserve a warm, safe place to call home. But we do need to pay mind to, it's not as simple as putting up four walls and a roof. It is actually about street trees. It is about having insulation and double glazed windows. It is about having a good community that is close to public transport. These are things that, you know, obviously we want to keep this housing statement short, but within the action plan, I wouldn't mind seeing some more attention paid to making sure that the houses that we build, or the houses that are built in our municipality, are actually appropriate and that they help encourage the community to thrive and be prosperous and have good health and wellbeing outcomes as well. There's been plenty of work done. This Healthy Active by Design, the Heart Foundation's done lots and lots of work on this. The UN Sustainable Development Goals kind of speak to this in one way or another. And so I think that there's more we can do when it comes to climate and environment to really improve what is, I think, a terrific initiative, which can really serve to help guide our council to make sure that housing does indeed become a human right for all Tasmanians. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Very supportive of this. I think it's fantastic. It's essentially sending the message that we want people to come and build in Kingborough, which is a good message to send. Particularly, as I think Councillor Dean said, the action plan I think is fantastic. Things like advocating for increased investment, working with developers and housing providers to facilitate development, and the considering opportunities to increase housing in Kingborough when developing or disposing of council land. There's a couple of things I want to mention. The first one was, I think, 5.2, where it's under the finance section, where it talks about the disposal of council land at a price lower than market value to facilitate housing developments would have revenue implications. I think we need to make sure when we do come to those decisions we get the balance right, because if we dispose of all the land for next to nothing, then essentially we're probably doing a disservice to a lot of the community because we're not reinvesting some of that money back into the community. So I think getting the balance there is right, important rather. And the other thing, I think, which I'm sure there'll be community members reading this saying, build, build, build. The other important thing is the infrastructure and services. We need to be making sure we're increasing the infrastructure and services, and also advocating to state government, federal government, that as we build all these houses and we're helping out other levels of government, they need to work with us to make sure the infrastructure keeps at the same pace. Otherwise, we're going to have some very angry residents, I imagine. So I think the two need to be done at the same level. But, yeah, I think it's a great document in summary and I'll definitely be supporting it.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Are there any further discussions? Councillor Dean, did you want to sum up?
I will take my opportunity to sum up.
Of course.
Look, thank you, obviously, to everyone and their contributions. I think we've found out some stuff that are really useful. You know, we've heard from questioning from the Deputy Mayor that this action plan is going to actually be overseen by an expert group of our staff, and not just one, but a cross-section of staff, which is really good. and, you know, as I've already said, this is about, you know, this is the bit that I'm really excited about, is that action plan and the implementation of it. And as the Director of Environment Planning and Communities alluded to, this is about now about the doing, and this is exactly what I think the community are expecting of councils around Tasmania, to I guess stop talking about it and really getting down and developing plans ourselves at a local level. Councillor Midge has alluded to the accountability side of things, which, you know, I fully support the sentiment there. The response from the director in terms of, you know, limited resources and capacity, I'm fully on board with and understand that, as I said, this is really about doing right now. But at the same time, we don't want to overburden staff who are already stretched to ensure that, you know, we're getting as much done as possibly on this action plan. And so I guess overall it is a really positive step for us as a council. If we're supporting this tonight, I guess it will mark our first formalised and coordinated effort as a council to improve housing in Kingborough. And, you know, I hope this, as Councillor Midge has also pointed out, I really do hope this paves the way for other councils across Tasmania to look at us and go, as we're doing in other spaces, but really look at us and say, well, you know what, there's actually more that we could be doing around Tasmania. So that's fantastic. And if we are going to be able to do our bit, I guess, to ensure that, you know, extra people have access to an affordable or safe roof over the head, then that's absolutely fantastic. And so just to really thank... I really want to thank the director and her staff for everything that's already gone into this, and it sounds like we're already on track to, if this is passed, to get cracking and make some really positive outcomes for our community. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. I'm going to put the motion, which was the original motion that was before us, that Council adopts and promotes the attached Statement of Housing to demonstrate its commitment to facilitating access to safe, accessible and affordable housing in Kingborough. Moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 35, Financial Report for May 2023, with a recommendation on page 37. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Antoli. And seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I thought I would give Councillor Bain a break tonight. He's a hard worker when it comes to moving these financial reports. First credit has to really go to our Chief Financial Officer and his team. For anyone to be able to balance the books in the current turbulent environment deserves praise. So I really feel that you're worthy and your team are worthy of that. We have a May 2023 financial report that shows an underlying deficit of $1 million, influenced by mainly high inflation. There are so many variances going on that have contributed to the current figures. It's like pistons punching in all directions. Higher rates revenue, lower statutory fees and fines, increased user fees, reduced grants that are recurrent, decreased other income, higher employee costs, elevated materials and services expenses. Anyone building a home will know that. There's been increase in other expenses. There has been some higher profit on the sale of assets and increased interest income. Like I said, pistons move in all directions. Council's cash and investments amount to about $17.9 million at the end of the month, which is down $4.8 million from the May 22 figure, and borrowings of $22.3 million offset this amount. I would love, Mayor, to get an understanding at some point about what the borrowings have been put towards. That would be great for the community to know that. Council forecasts or predicts a $379,000 underlying deficit for the full financial year, which continually underlines the financial pressures that we are under, mentioned, or for all the reasons mentioned above. But the report concludes that the financial results do not pose a significant risk to the council, and it is therefore recommended that we endorse and accept this financial report.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. There was a question in that in relation to the borrowings. Mr Breen, could you provide some response? Thank you.
Through you, Mayor. So essentially the majority of our borrowings related to the Kingston Park development, so we were able to get a number of interest-free loans associated with Kingston Park. During that process we also identified the potential to borrow $1.2 million for the LED street lighting, so which allowed us then to progress with putting LEDs into our street lights. And then right towards the end of the period during the COVID pandemic, The government announced that it would provide interest-free loans associated with pandemic-related activities, and council got $9.4 million worth of borrowings associated with the pandemic. So, as noted in the report, $5.9 million of the borrowings will be repaid in June, and that's the first lot of maturities that we have in regards to the borrowings.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor, and through you. My question is about the risk, and that, you know, currently what we're looking at, despite the inflation and despite the various shocks we've had, that it doesn't present a significant financial risk to council. I'm interested in knowing what would constitute a significant financial risk to the council, and how much further do we have to go? Obviously, we don't have a crystal ball, but I'm just interested to know what are these thresholds that. On what basis are we saying that we're not currently at risk, and when would we start saying, OK, we're at risk?
Mr Breen.
Yes, through you, Mayor. So essentially, it's probably more a look at the long-term financial plan is probably the more important parameter to look at. So if we were continuing to generate significant underlying deficits going out into the future, certainly that would be a significant risk and something that the Audit Office would look at us pretty closely in regards to our financial performance. So given this is a one-off deficit associated with inflation-related impacts, we understand those impacts now, we know what the impacts will be in the next financial year, and we're aiming for a break-even result that particular year. So essentially, as a one-off deficit, it doesn't pose significant risks, but if they were ongoing, then that would be the sort of thing you would look at as significant.
Thank you. And through you, Mayor.
Councillor Cordova.
Just one more question about, in terms of our risk management then, is it necessary at some stage to update our strategic risk register regarding inflation, or is it pretty much a consensus opinion that the type of inflation that we've seen is actually just passing through, and that therefore it doesn't constitute a significant risk?
Mr Breen.
Through you, Mayor. So basically our risk register has been updated. We have a financial sustainability risk within the register, and over the last 12-18 months it's been updated to recognise inflation as being a risk associated with that financial sustainability work that we do. So I guess essentially at this stage it's in the risk register. I think we've now got a fairly good understanding of the impacts on our financial, basically our expense lines. So I think generally that risk is reasonably well controlled at this stage.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just another question on the borrowings. Given we've got about $12 million in borrowings maturing in June 2024, is that where we hope to see some of the return from Kingston Park paying that down prior to June 2024?
Mr Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Certainly that was the original hope. There has been some delays, obviously, in the developments on Kingston Park, and I know the developer is working through those. I guess at this stage probably the commercial property would be the most likely to proceed, and so therefore the funds for the sale of that property certainly would contribute to repaying some of that debt. So at the moment we probably, after we pay the loans that are maturing this particular month, we'll probably be sitting on somewhere between $12 and $14 million. So it does allow us probably $4 to $6 million that we can use to pay down some of that debt as well. So I can't see at this stage that we would repay all that debt next financial year, but certainly we'll keep some of that debt and we'll have to roll that forward, and then hopefully future development stages will allow for land sales.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Any further questions? I just have one question, Mr Breen, just in relation to the comment here that the income at the Kingborough Sports Centre was, I think it was $55,000 over budget, predominantly as a result of increased kiosk sales. That seems like a... Are they selling something really good there? That it just seems like a significant jump. Do you... Do we have any more information on why that has gone over budget?
Through you, Mayor. No, nothing specifically. My assumption is that it's to do with a lot of the basketball events they have there, that was significant turnover. And admittedly, over the last probably 3 years, we've well and truly exceeded our kiosk sales expectations, and to the extent of between $50,000 and $100,000 a year. So it has been going extremely well. It gets well patronised, and certainly significant events boost the numbers.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? No.
I just had a comment around the sports centre. Bit of a sometimes user of the sports centre, just noting as well that the classes are getting so booked out, so you know, you can see that it is becoming, has really changed dynamics up there in the last couple of years, becoming really popular. So I'd like to give a big shout out to the staff there, and great job that what they're doing to increase the patronage as well.
Thank you, Councillor Medgley. And that just reaffirms the fact that we need an expansion of the Kingsbury Sports Centre, as I mentioned earlier. So for anyone from the federal government who's watching along at home, we're coming for it. I will ask Councillor Antoli, would you like to sum up?
No, thank you, Mayor. That was a great, interesting debate.
Thank you very much. I will put the motion that Council endorses the attached financial report as at the 31st of May 2023, moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to the appendices on page 60. There were a number there. We've already had a couple of questions in relation to them during questions without notice. Are there any further questions on those appendices? No. Could I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved Councillor Gladewright, seconded Councillor Dean. Any comment, discussion? Sorry, I should have asked that before I got the movers. After. No. If not, I will put the motion that the appendices attached to the agenda be received and noted. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Notice of motion. There were no notices of motion. We are now confirmation of minutes of items to be dealt with in closed session. We just have confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. We've got a mover, Councillor Antoli, a seconder, and Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much to everybody who has been with us this evening at home. Thank you to councillors and staff for your participation this evening. The open session of council closes at 7:26 p.m.